Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
This is Dr. Steven Streifer now. He's the Deputy Laboratory Director for Science and Technology at the Argonne National Lab in Lamont. The one-year anniversary of yesterday, Doctor, you fill in the blank now. Yesterday was the one-year anniversary of what again?
The one-year anniversary of when the genome of the SARS-CoV-2 virus was released. And, of course, this is the virus that causes COVID-19 that we're also concerned about right now. So quite a milestone as we try to address the pandemic that's been hitting the U.S. and the world.
Welcome to the show, and thank you for the work you all are doing over there. Hundreds of men and women in Lamont are toiling every day on science projects, the likes of which are saving lives. Really, you can't have the medicine and you can't have a vaccine unless you know what it is that you're trying to medicate or vaccinate against.
Exactly, and it's really been something that Argonne is very proud to contribute to. This has really been a struggle, obviously, for the country and the region. We're all aware of what's going on every day as people get sick, and unfortunately we have our friends and loved ones passing away from this, so it's really important that we attack it. So Argonne has really been working hard on a couple of different things. We are working hard at supporting research that actually underlies the two vaccines that have been approved in the United States. And then we're also working hard at looking at this thing that I talked about just a second ago, the genome of the virus, basically the blueprint of the virus, and trying to understand how that's changing with time and what those changes might mean for us.
You know, I'm a little surprised, though. I'm looking at the calendar. Today is January 11th. So January 10th, then, of 2020, we had the genetic code for coronavirus?
Exactly. So coming out of what we actually did for the Human Genome Project a number of years ago now, I think people will be familiar with that. Yeah. We developed the technology to be able to sequence genomes, essentially the code that underlies life and is the blueprint for organisms. So very quickly, as the virus took hold in China, Chinese scientists sequenced the genome of the virus and made that available to the scientific community so that scientists could start to understand and study the parts of the virus, understand how it reproduces, understand in the human body how it infects the human body, and understand how to attack it. And ever since then, both at Argonne and scientists around the world have been working on using that as a way to understand how to develop medicines and how to treat this very terrible outbreak.
We've all seen pictures of it, that little red ball with the spikes, looks like a sea urchin. Yeah, those aren't, are those representations of it? Are we actually ever looking at it literally? Like we've literally put our eyeballs on that. We see it and you can see the spikes.
Yeah, very close to that. So there are a couple of ways that we look at the structure of things like a virus. The first is using something called cryo-electron microscopy. We're very similar to the way that your human eye uses light to look at things. We can use electrons to be able to do a similar sort of imaging. And many of the pictures that you've seen of the virus are taken exactly by this technique, cryo-electron microscopy. A lot of the images are also computer simulations that come from a different standpoint. We can use something called X-ray crystallography, a sort of technique that's done at a giant X-ray microscope called the Advanced Photon Source at Argonne. That allows us to look at the atomic structure of the proteins that make up the virus, as well as the proteins that the virus uses to interact with human cells. And by putting all those together, we build up these pictures that everybody's seen, both in the news media and really everywhere around us today.
So how many times have you blown up, then, the actual virus so that we can see it? When I see it in the newspaper or on the Internet, how powerful, let's say, is that advanced photon source that you use?
Well, if you look at the spacing between atoms, those typically are in a unit that we call angstroms, which is 10 to the minus 10 meters. So when we blow up these pictures, when we use the APS as a giant microscope, we're really magnifying things about 10 billion times so that we can get a view in our world of what these proteins look like.
Wow. So then, but I don't know anything about this, right? But like when they sequence the human genome, it's like A, D, T, C, G, T, H. It's just like this alphabet of just half a dozen letters, and it goes on for infinity. Is it the same sort of thing that you have for the coronavirus? That's what you did? You figured out what those letters are?
Great question, and you're absolutely right. So viruses use the same sequence of what are called bases that are the same things that are present in the human genome. And these are the letters you refer to, the alphabet that make up, in our case, DNA. So the human genome has got about 3 billion of these base pairs that make up our genome. A typical virus has got anywhere between about 1,000 to 30,000 of these base pairs, where it turns out that coronaviruses like SARS-CoV-2, again, the virus that causes COVID-19, is on the large end for viruses. It has about 30,000 of these alphabets, so it's about 100,000 times smaller than the human genome. But this virus genome, this 30,000 base pairs in RNA, it's a single strand, as opposed to DNA, which is a double strand of these base pairs in the human genome, just a single strand in this particular virus, about 100,000 times smaller than the human genome. But this is what encodes the proteins that both make up the virus and that the virus uses to interact with the human body.
Hmm. So then does somebody look at that visually and say, aha, I know, let's find something to cut off the spikes? Or I wonder, I don't know if you can explain to us in a way that we can appreciate, but knowing that, then what do you do? Like, how do you take that information and fight the virus?
Another great question. There are a couple of different techniques we use to do this. So let me turn to the first, which is actually based on computer analysis. So one of the great things about the work that we do here at Argonne, we have one of the world's largest supercomputers here. And by feeding these genetic sequences into that supercomputer, we can use the supercomputer to basically build up a family tree of the genome, looking at all the genetic sequences that are generated around both the U.S. and the world as patients are sampled. We can take those samples, we can do the sequence of those samples, and then compare them against each other, and then start to build up the family tree of the different types of mutations that the virus has experienced over time.
Hmm.
So viruses actually mutate fairly typically, and right now there are thousands and thousands of what are referred to as strains, even of the COVID-19 virus. So it's quite common for it to mutate. And by building up this family tree, we can start to compare different parts of the virus, different parts of the genetic sequence, and then start to ask questions related to patient outcomes about what those changes mean. The other way that we can do that is once we have the genome of the virus, we can actually use that genome to artificially express proteins, make the proteins that the virus uses. And these are the things that we take to the advanced photon source into our giant X-ray microscope and actually directly look at the structure of the proteins.
Yeah, I knew that. You know, I wonder too, and this will sound odd, but just humor me for a moment. I wonder if the researchers that are involved in this work in Lamont are excited by the fact that, you know, their life's studies are not only coming to the fore, but are saving lives. Like, you know, you are the cavalry here. We can't go forward as a society unless we have somebody that can protect us, and it requires scientists and doctors and the stuff that you're talking about that you seem to be so fluent in. I wonder if you all have a sense of appreciation of your moment in time, as it were.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important point. I hate to call it excited because this is such a terrible time for all of us.
Yeah.
But certainly we're all honored and aware of the importance that we have in the system. And I think one very important point that comes along with this is it really emphasizes the importance of fundamental research and the government's support for fundamental research. If you look at the two vaccines that have been approved in the U.S. right now, the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, it turns out that there's been work that's been done at the APS, the Advanced Photon Source, for about a decade on the way in which other types of viruses infect human cells. And the understanding that the scientists working from around the country at the APS have built up on these infection mechanisms is really what allowed us to develop the vaccines for SARS-CoV-2 for COVID-19 so quickly. So even though it may be for all of us who are suffering the effects of what the virus has done to both our family and our societies, It may seem like it's been a long time. It's been a year since we've been dealing with this. But typically it takes years to decades to develop a vaccine for a new virus. And the fact that we've been able to do this in under a year is really a testament to the power of basic research and how important it is in keeping society safe.
Yeah, I wonder if you guys have now let the genie out of the bottle. You know, you've made us impatient the next time something comes down the pike and we're going to say, well, you took that impossible virus and you figured that out in a year and got us. I mean, think about that. You knew about this January 10th. You had the genetic code, but most of us didn't pay any attention to it until St. Patrick's Day. And within a year's time, we've gone from our hearing the word coronavirus to getting shots in our arms to prevent us from getting it. Next time something like this comes along, people are going to wonder if you can duplicate this effort.
We hope so, and I think that will be one of the long-lasting outcomes that comes from what's happening right now. The technologies that we're developing that have gone into the vaccines that are available, that's gone into what I talked about, the analysis of the genome and other types of technology associated with this virus, we need to keep those research directions alive. This will not be the last time that we have a threat like this. As humankind interacts more and more with the natural environment, as humans encroach into what otherwise have been wild environments, we're going to see more transmission from animal species to humans and more outbreaks of virus like this, just simply because the world is more interconnected. Yeah. And we have to be ready for that. And the machinery that we built up as part of our response to COVID-19 has to be ready for the next time it happens. So I'm proud to be one of the people who's on the front lines, not quite the way that medical researchers are, but on the scientific front lines, as we like to say. And one of those people that hopefully will help us respond next time this happens.
One more question
it's
for
a good,
you.
It's a good thing to ask us for.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Steven Streifer's on the phone line. He's the Deputy Laboratory Director for Science and Technology at the Argonne National Lab. Those folks out in Lamont. There's the news now of this new strain. I guess, do we have a genetic sequence for that? And do you have any information for us about the new strain that has been troubling people?
We do. And this is actually, as well, a close collaboration with our colleagues at the University of Chicago, just south of the city. It turns out, again, getting back to what I was saying earlier on, there are over 5,000 strains of the virus that have been sequenced even in the middle of last year. This is a virus, as all viruses, that mutates with time, and we have to keep track of those mutations. So the mutations that have been detected in the UK, in South Africa, now in Japan and Brazil, these are the sorts of things that we expect to happen. With time, viruses mutate. Frequently, those mutations are selected because they help the virus spread. The good news now is that the vaccines that have been developed so far, people believe that they will be effective against these mutants, and these mutants don't appear to lead to worse health outcomes, just potentially to more transmission of the virus, although the more people that get it, obviously the worse society is. So those genomes are available. They were sequenced very quickly, and people are hard at work trying to make sure that we understand them, understand where they come from, and understand how they're propagating so that we can keep tabs on them.
Are we doing a good job attracting people to this line of work? Are you all being funded appropriately?
We'd always love more money. I think all the funding that we get, and it is taxpayer dollars at work, all the funding that we get is very well utilized, and it's really going to make sure that we're responding as well as we can. I think as we look at the new administration coming in, they're very carefully considering priorities for the Department of Energy and other parts of the federal government to make sure that money is allocated in a way that we can respond most effectively and keep basic research moving forward. And I think the public can look at the way that science has responded to COVID-19 as a great example of a good use of taxpayer dollars and why more funding would be a good idea.
I know that you all were involved in the development of reusable antiviral N95 masks. You did modeling for how COVID-19 would spread in Chicago, or I guess is spreading. Can you give me the elevator speech on that? What's your best 45 seconds on modeling the spread of COVID-19 in Chicago? What did you do there?
Oh, it's another great example of the really powerful computers we have at Argonne. So you can think of this as really SimCity for understanding viral transmission.
So
what we've done is essentially built a model with little avatars that represent the population of Chicago, just abstract avatars, not real people. And by observing the behavior of those avatars, we can understand and model the way in which different things will affect the transmission of the virus, from understanding how school closures will affect that, to trying to develop the best strategies to get the vaccine into the city to minimize transmission.
So then the, I guess, challenge is for the politicians to hear what you've figured out or what that simulation shows, to adhere to that, and then get people to pay attention. So there's quite a distance maybe from what you know and what we do. That must be fascinating slash frustrating for you all.
It's been great to be in Illinois. The governor's office, the city under the mayor, as well as the Cook County officials have worked with us and other modelers very closely, a number of different modeling groups within the state, very closely to make sure that they're getting the best science they can. It's always a challenge to explain to people why the short-term impacts of, for instance, closing restaurants are important for the long-term public good. And I think that's something we need to continue to work on, and just explaining to people why these steps are necessary. That's all we can do.
Stephen Streifer is the Deputy Laboratory Director for Science and Technology at Argonne in Lamont. Oh, well done. I'd buy you a cup of coffee if I could. Maybe I'll send some over, Stephen, but my best to you and everybody over there.
In a few months, I look forward to taking you up on that. And please be safe, and it's great talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
In a few months, it might be more than coffee. Might be an adult beverage or two.